admin, I consent.
All right. We are now reconvened for the administrative portion of the meeting. We have actually no items on consent. So we'll move into the discussion. The first item, Stacy, the 2019 Consumer Contact Report.
So it is that time again where we look back at 2019 and see all of the contacts that the commission received. So you guys should have a copy of the report, hopefully. Yes? Okay. So as in the past, I did the five-year comparison, and that chart, the first chart is the summary of everything, so that's probably the easiest thing to look at. If you look down and compare, there wasn't a whole lot of things. You'll see that the PUD electric line is up somewhat, and that is because of wind farm cases. It's kind of confusing. I don't know why the system doesn't put that under siting, but it doesn't. It puts it under electric. So a lot of those are comments received due to wind farm cases.
And if I can just interrupt there, mm-hmm. since you're on that topic, yep. that was the note I made on here. First, I was alarmed at all these electric cases and
yep.
and got to reviewing it and seeing why. And can we fix the system? I mean, it's clearly a siting issue.
We have a brand new system that went live on January 1st, so things are going to look completely different when we do this next year.
Okay.
Which will be a challenge to some extent because
we wanted
to make sure we had a consistent trend line, so we'll have to do some adjusting there.
We might not be able to compare, next year apples to apples because we're going to have different categories, but we'll have to look at that and figure out how we do that.
A way to keep the most important ones mm-hmm. relevant. Otherwise, we've lost five years of statistics, which I hate to do.
Of course, how many instances did we have over the past 5 years of 2019? There it was a spike, driven by wind farm calls.
It's all that.
But what if 20% of the calls in 2016 are driven, by something that really wasn't electric?
It's pretty related, safe to say it wasn't that. They were wind farms.
Well, that's why I said. That's why I said 20. It had jumped.
Yeah, we'll be able to see.
100, so.
Yeah, we'll be able to see exactly what they're related to. And the big detailed report that you have behind that actually will show you that. You have to wade through it, but it breaks it down.
Which case is what?
Yeah, it breaks it down by every single one.
Actually, we can get to a really solid baseline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From the past 5 years, just take a little bit of.
Yeah, we'll just have to figure that out.
It just seems like with a line for siting. And then to have all these siting calls not be in it. That's what.
It's kind of shocking that we hadn't picked up on that before. We looked at this 5 years, and I just noticed it this year for the first time.
Yeah, what it does is for public input, when it recognizes public input, the old system, it would put those under like electric, gas, pipeline, whatever it related to. If you had an actual siting complaint, that's when it would show up under siting. And that's why you see fairly small numbers there of five. So those are specific siting-related complaints that came in. Someone complaining about reclamation after a project or something like that.
Dakota Access shows up under pipelines, not siting.
Yes. So that was the next one that I was going to talk to. So when you look under pipelines, you'll see 94. And we had talked about the best way to represent this because, as we know, we got the huge petitions, form letters, whatever you want to call them, that had one message. They were all the same and just included thousands and thousands of signatures. So it's not showing you there that we had the 26,000 signatures. So it includes the unique comments that we got. So we had 94 unique comments related to pipelines. And then down below, I broke out specifically the Dakota Access signatures. So you can see that we had 92 unique comments. And then 25,647 signatures from the petition started by the Lakota People's Law Project, 54 from the Sierra Club, and 293 from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, for a total of 26,086 signatures on those petitions.
And it was the same letter in all those cases?
Yes.
Or was it a different letter from Sierra Club, a different letter?
No, each of those groups had different ones.
Okay, so...
But the
a form letter in each case, though.
Yes.
Okay.
The 25,647 from the Lakota People's Law Project were, yeah, all exactly the same, and they would just sign their names.
And the same with Standing Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now you say in the chart you've got 92 unique comments, and up in the top.
Yep. There was 92. Two other comments related to, I believe it was when the Keystone spill happened.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's all pipeline comments. I think the other two are Keystone related.
All right. Very good. I think that the way you did it here is perfect.
Yeah, it's hard to work with all those numbers and get a good feel for...
It gives us a good idea.
It gives a really good idea of what we received, though. Yep. Everything else in that top chart, and the top chart includes everything that we receive, so that's complaints, public input, and then the quick referrals at the bottom. The bottom chart.
Just before you move on from the top chart,
yep.
I just want to highlight one other thing, and we kind of hit on it in opening comments, actually, all three of us. On the telecom, you know, if even a handful of people are still out there without broadband, but more importantly, even at times for weeks on end without even 911 or reverse 911, it's terrible. But when you look at this, except for that 16 and 17 are kind of reversed, but by small percentages, you just see these telecom call numbers dropping as our telcos in North Dakota continue to get these worst spots built out. So, yeah, it's taken longer than one would hope, but you look at this and you definitely have to say they're making progress.
I'd like to highlight one more thing, and that's on the railroad side of things. Mm-hmm. You see the 25 calls on railroad issues. I think that highlights a couple things, but one of them, I think, is there's more general awareness, I think, that the PSC has some influence on rail issues, and that we're a place where people can call. And get some assistance. And we've 12 of those were block crossings. So that's a constant sore spot for some communities. And I know Conrad works really closely on a weekly basis with different communities in the state and trying to advocate for them with the railroads and the block crossings. And it's an important issue and one that we don't have the enforcement capabilities, but we can try to just be a liaison to the railroads to find solutions there. But then there's a whole variety of issues relating to fencing and right-of-way and just a number of different noise issues related to the railroads where we're trying to help citizens get some action.
Any other questions on the top part?
I would just say, as always, this is really an important document to know that we remain accessible and anything we can do to improve communication between the agency and the public is critical, and a very nice job done.
The bottom chart on your sheet then is specifically breaking out the complaints, the informal complaints for our regulated utilities, which we just like to see what's going on with them. So you will see, so these are just complaints, not public input related to a case or anything like that, specific filed complaints. You'll see that MDU's numbers were down a little bit and consistent with what we usually see from 20 to 13. Excels were down quite a bit, actually, 35 last year and only 18 this year. And that's lowest number that they've had in 5 years, so that's good. Otter Tail had an increase. Those were related to those issues we saw with their new billing system right. early in the year where we were getting the complaints. So that's where that increase came from.
Did anyone circle back not happy with how it was
rectified by the company? No, it seems like after that was rolled out, after about that month there, then things quieted down. And I know that they worked on, I think, how it was presented and how they were communicating about it. I still get questions every once in a while about their energy and renewable line. It's presented a little differently. They have a couple categories combined there that I think the other utilities don't combine, and it seems to fluctuate a lot. And I get lots of questions about that line item yet on the bills, but...
We should ask about that the next time we're sitting down with the company to circle back and see how they settled that issue. Because the billing, the verbiage on billing matters a lot, especially as people examine their bills more and more. And we want it to be as clear as possible what's happening and what they're being charged.
Yeah, they call it energy and renewable adjustments. So I think it includes like all of the energy costs and then... I don't even know if there is any renewable in there, but people think that if it goes up, they're paying for wind towers. That's what they always call me about. So I'm paying for some more of those wind towers. And yeah. I actually don't think that's the reason ever that I've heard that that's why that line item goes up. Well, it's more fuel costs.
Yeah,
that's a challenge, isn't it?
They should have a fuel cost rider. And
they combine them all on the bill, though. That's what I was saying. They do when the customer sees it on the bill, they combine it all into that one line item. And so it gets confusing, and then it does change a lot from month to month, it seems like.
Well, part of it's driven on our end, too, though, I think, in terms of how advocacy goes about, their approach, if you will. And sometimes when you attempt to be more transparent or create a line item like that so the public, they can actually see. Mm-hmm. The rate payer, the bill payer can actually see, okay, more specifically, how does my bill break down versus just melding it into energy charge, for example.
Yeah.
And if it's done a little bit differently than another utility, for example, then it appears to be probably more erratic than it actually is in reality.
Yeah, it seems to be a case. It would be a good question for the utility
folks to look at. But if they're combining the energy and the renewable rider into one. Because those should be separate.
They're separate in the bookwork, but on the bill.
Yeah, because one is where you're paying for the towers, but and the other is where you're just paying fuel costs, and they somewhat off.
On the bill, they're put together, though, somehow.
Okay.
Well, I think it could be broken into yet another line item, but that's... And we have to answer that question of how many line items and creates more confusion than provides answers.
Fit on their bill. Yeah. And I have room for it on the bill.
Right.
They had some meter reading issues right around that time, too, that all kind of combined during that spike at the beginning of the year. But it's been quiet now.
Yep. Good questions to keep asking the company.
And then the last one, CenturyLink. Just a very slight increase, so fairly consistent. The majority of the complaints that we get with CenturyLink still revolve around lengthy outages or people who have constant outages. So numbers are better, but it still revolves around the same issue. I don't get the simple, just I think my bill is wrong questions when I get CenturyLink complaints. It's still because usually their phone hasn't been working for, 6 weeks and it hasn't been fixed. And we had some areas that we worked on last year too, like the Huff area we had been getting complaints from, and we've been pushing them towards some upgrades that are almost complete in that area. So
good work, Stacy.
You guys did some nice work on that area specifically.
On January 1st, we started using the new system, and thanks to Cheryl, who put in a lot of work, and she's been kind of tweaking things for me as I've been using it now. So, I think we'll be able to do reporting more easily and break it out how we want to see it. So we'll start working with that as I start sending you even the first monthly reports. And eventually, the really nice thing will be that when it's set up, the public can actually go in, especially for public input, and go onto our website and just submit their own input and submit it directly into the case. Whereas now, either a person sends me an email or a letter or a phone call, and then I have to put it into the system. So if people actually start using that, it just will go automatically in there, which is a time saver for me if I don't have to manually scan it and put it into the system. So that'll be a nice tool once that gets up and going.
Stacey, I want to take this opportunity as portfolio holder to applaud your good work in this area. You are so patient with people who call and so thorough, and you never just push people off. I know you always give them the time. It's not always easy because people can get very grumpy, and you get a lot of calls that aren't even related to our agency, and that's where I really appreciate your extra effort to try to refer them in a meaningful way rather than just saying, nope, not our job, and sending them off into the abyss just to get more and more frustrated with government. So I thank you for your good work and all that you do for all of us and for the other directors taking care of complaints related to issues in which we have jurisdiction. You do a great job.
Thanks.
Well said.
All right. So I did send you guys a draft news release to release this information. So as soon as that's ready, I'll have that out. I think I need a quote from you, Commissioner.
Perfect.
I think I set a record. I'm getting a quote back. And
you were the first one to get me a quote, yes.
7 minutes.
I don't know if we have an award for that, but we can come up with one.
There should be an award for that.
So we'll release.
You don't get hounded.
We'll get these statistics out.
Yeah, it just happened to hit. It was like, oh, I can take care of this right now. All right. Thank you, Stacey.
You're welcome.
And any other discussion matters that we don't have listed on the agenda?
Okay.
Seeing none, I have just the one scheduling.
I actually just wanted to briefly bring you guys up to speed on what's going on with OMS.
So that's a yes there, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was sitting here thinking there was something. This you could call it MISO Advisory Committee if you want to add it to the agenda for the minutes. But so the advisory committee is the group that I sit on for OMS. We provide advice to the MISO board. The advisory committee for the last year has been working on a process, more than a year, for accepting new members. The Lignite Energy Council is a new member that wants to join, and they've been sitting out there languishing for the last year and a half trying to find a sector on the advisory committee that would take them. So this is just a long and fairly frustrating ordeal that has the sector where they were supposed to join, which was for new people who don't fit anywhere else, is called environmental/other. Well, the environmental group basically said, no, you can't join here, and they get to set the rules. So they blocked them out. Then as things proceeded and we kept pushing this, it became clear that there were going to be some other options for them. And then I think the environmental sector decided, well, no, actually, it might be better to have them in us. So now then they invited them back in to that sector. Well, since then, the Lake Energy Council said, well, we won't really have a voice through this sector, so we're hoping to have a more meaningful voice. So just before the meeting, the group was contemplating a few different options. For providing a pathway for the Lignite Energy Council and others to join MISO and participate through the advisory committee, which is the only committee that speaks directly to the board. That's why it's important to be involved in the advisory committee. So the OMS, so all the regulators, we had come up with a proposal to create an affiliate sector that wouldn't give them a vote, but it would give them a voice at the table. At the advisory committee meetings. And the other option that's on the table is for the Lignite Energy Council to join the environmental/other group, and then they'll have to do their best to work through that sector to get their, have their voice in the mix. So I'm not sure. I had to leave the call and come to the meeting. But I think those are the two proposals that will be on the table for the advisory committee next month to vote on. And after that, then that whatever the advisory committee position is will get forwarded to the board, and the board will ultimately make a decision. So, but Lincoln Energy Council has applied and submitted their membership application, their fee. So they will be a member. It's just a matter of where they're going to have their input. But I've been saying all along, I don't care who the group is, there should be a place, a way for them to have meaningful input in the process. It's a stakeholder-driven process, and any stakeholder that has a vested interest should be able to have their interest heard by the MISO board, and the board will do with it what they ultimately decide. However, blocking them out, in my opinion, and in the other members of our, the commissioner members and the public consumer members all have been advocating for a meaningful voice, a way for them to have a meaningful voice. A lot of the other groups have sadly just been protecting their own special interests. So it's been an eye-opening process.
It's an incredibly frustrating situation when energy policy is without question being driven by either inclusion or exclusion in these groups.
Yep.
It's being driven nationally. It's not just, this isn't just a one-off. This is happening nationwide and with very little consideration given to the economic impact, the long-term economic impact to ratepayers. Because special interest groups have an agenda and they want to march down a certain road, and they're not willing to have as open a dialogue in many cases as they should.
And Lignite is a special interest group too. So all special interest groups should be heard. If you're going to listen to any, you should listen to all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They should have a seat at the table because we're going to eventually get to a point of no return to where generation type isn't optional. It's going to be what it is, and trying to right the ship if it ends up going astray is going to be a massive undertaking if it can even be done at that point. But anyway, I find it frustrating.
That's the latest on that, and we'll be voting on it next month, and then we'll see how it all settles out.
Okay. Any other discussion matters? So we just have, I'm sure we'll have more than, well, I shouldn't say I'm sure we could have more than one, but Russo Wind Partners, we're looking for a time for that. The oral argument. Pat?
Right. Russo Wind would like, they sent us a letter on January 15th, and they've requested either oral argument or an informal hearing with the commission on or before February 14th. And I have some dates that Zach Pelham is available as well. He's available the 10th through the 14th of February, but on the 14th in the afternoon only.
Nothing before
I'll be at NARUC the 10th and 11th, but I am around the 12th, 13th, and 14th. Who is it that was available that time?
That's Zach. Those are his dates.
The week before, he's not available at all.
What was the last
one? Not available the week before that.
He didn't provide dates for that, so I'm assuming he isn't.
We do have that informal on this.
Oh, here he says, I'm not available first full week in February.
What did you just say, Julia? I know the 10th and 11th. Were you available the 12th?
I am. Yep. I'll be coming back the night of the 11th. So, 12th, 13th, and 14th, I'm available.
As am I.
So.
How about the 13th?
Okay.
Do you have anything on your schedule, Brian?
That's what I'm looking at. Three different calendars. So we're, okay, 14th, you said?
13th.
13th. We'd be done by 5 o'clock, correct?
Yeah. Why don't we have it in the morning? Let's see. 10 or something 10? Like
that? Well, did you say Zach can't do it in the morning? Or was that the 14th? Was the afternoon?
That was the 14th.
Oh, yeah. If we can do the 13th in the morning, then that would be
10?
Fantastic.
10 o'clock?
Sounds great.
Did we want to do something on scheduling just to acknowledge what was in the motion about scheduling that One Oak hearing on March 6th, or is it just go without saying since it was in the motion?
It's not actually listed yet on the calendar. So
well, it wouldn't have been wouldn't until been. We're done.
Right.
Right. So we'll need to get that on.
But anyway, just to be clear, we're doing that on March 6th at whatever time.
Right. In Williston. I wanted to discuss the procedure for and the timing of moving forward with enforcement action on the light mitigating technology compliance. Do you have thoughts on that, Pat? Have you guys had conversations with those companies?
The companies that have the two Brady Wind companies and the Oliver 3.
Yeah.
We have been in visiting with Casey Fury about moving forward on that. And so we're expecting something from them or from her soon.
Okay. Are you thinking that you might come forward with a recommended consent agreement that we might vote on, or just more of a recommendation that we can discuss and take our input and go back? How would you like to proceed?
Well, if the commissioners, if you don't have any preference, we would probably see if there's a possibility for a consent agreement.
Okay.
And if the companies,
because we can always deny it.
Sure.
If we don't think it's appropriate, whatever you guys settle on, we have the option of saying no. And then you could go back to the drawing board. Or the other option might be to come forward with a proposal, and then we could have a work session or something to that effect.
Right.
Is there any...
But for now, we'll work with the company.
Yeah.
Companies.
What are you thinking in terms of a timeline?
I would like to get that done by the end of February.
Okay.
On those three cases?
On those three, yes. On the others, I thought we would, there's two others, the one's the Foxtail Wind Farm and the Emmons Logan. Mm-hmm. And on those, we wait to get the report that the lighting is actually in operation before we move forward.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. I wouldn't want it to take any longer than the end of February, though. The middle of February would be
on the first three. Okay.
Yeah.
Seems to me that's quite a bit of time too.
Yeah.
Now the results are kind of in.
Yeah.
Sure.
So if you can even shoot for the middle of February, that would be better. Just to get everybody thinking that sometimes that's the biggest challenge is getting everybody's timelines adjusted.
Yeah, we do have a meeting on the 19th.
That'd be a good target.
The informal hearing is open. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, no,
as far as if it's a consent agreement, that maybe we could take action on it on the 19th.
To consider at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then you'd want to have it done the week before that.
But, if it's a consent agreement, would you want to have a work session? I guess, depending on what it is.
Yeah, I think you just have to get it done ahead of time and see. Okay, that's all for me.
Commissioner Christman, anything else?
I do not.
Okay, then we are adjourned.
Did you?